Hey everyone, welcome to Guards of Eden. Today's guest is Josie Norton, and today's episode is the finale for Season 4. I'm extremely grateful for the stories I've been able to share in this season. The guests have been absolutely incredible. They've been from many different walks of life. They've been from all around the world. It's just been incredible. I'm extremely grateful for their time and stories. And in a lot of ways, Josie's the absolute perfect way to wrap up Season 4. And I think she's actually probably one of the greatest examples of why Guards of Eden was even born and what led me to podcasting. So I was fortunate enough to meet Josie a few years back, and I was immediately just struck by how kind and compassionate she was. She was extremely graceful with her time and her attention. And I think that probably actually comes into play with this episode because of I appreciate just how busy she is at the moment. Whilst this is being recorded, there's a lot of political and refugee dismay in Afghanistan, and her taking the time out to record this episode is something that I don't take lightly. So it was an incredible conversation. We start off and talking about wondering if this is something that Josie maybe considered as a kid and going into this amazing kind of journey of charitable work and heading up a non-profit organization, which is helped millions of people, it's helped raise millions of pounds. And yeah, the charity, of course, is Choose Love, for those of you that don't know, which looks to provide humanitarian aid for refugees. And yeah, I'm so grateful for this conversation. And I say in the episode about Josie's just one of the most phenomenal women I've been fortunate enough to meet. And I'm extremely grateful that she's now sharing her story on Guards of Eden. So if you do enjoy this episode, please, please check out what Josie's got going on and what Choose Love's got going on. Their merch is absolutely fantastic. I love it personally. But yeah, I just cannot wait for you guys to hear the episode. So without further ado, for one last time in Season 4, 3, 2, 1, let's go. Hey, Josie, how are you?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing very good. One thing I do feel bad about, which I didn't say before this, was that I've got my Choose Love t-shirts like right here and I've not worn one. I feel very bad.
Oh, well, the fact that you've got it right there means everything. So thank you very much for buying one.
It's within arm's reach, just here. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. It's been a really busy week at Choose Love. It's always a busy week at Choose Love. But the organisation has been doing what we can to respond to what's happening in Afghanistan. So we've been overwhelmed by public support and heartbroken at the situation. And it's been busy, but I am good.
Good. Well, I'm glad you're good. And I'm going to start with the first question. So I have a Spotify playlist, which is the Guards of Eden soundtrack. And what it is that each guest gives me one song that reminds them of a positive memory or just makes them feel good. So Josie, can you please give me a song that either reminds you of a positive memory or makes you feel good?
Oh gosh, it's such a good question, and there's so many different songs. So it's hard to pick the best one, but I am going to pick, maybe it's a bit cheesy, but I'm going to pick Wanna Be by the Spice Girls.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, because that was, you know, when I started secondary school, me and my like best friends, we just like loved them so much and spent all our spare time video recording ourselves performing as them, and we knew all the dance moves, and Spice Girls just felt like that, I don't know, made us believe that we could be whoever we wanted to be. And you know, that those are such happy memories of me and my friends at that time, kind of the turn of the age of innocence. So that's the song I'm gonna pick.
That's an absolute belter. I'm a very big fan. So that that lives on the Guards of Eden soundtrack playlist, which is a Spotify playlist, and that lives in the show notes for those of you that are listening. Right, Josie, how do you remember your childhood growing up, and what was a young Josie like growing up?
I sometimes freak out that I can't remember my childhood enough. I don't know if other people get that. I like feel like I need to write everything down or something because the memories are feeling more and more distant. But I was very lucky, had a lovely childhood, and it was spent a lot of time, you know, before mobile phones, and just before the internet came out, kind of the internet came out as I became a teenager. But so it was pretty innocent. And I was very like, I want to do something bigger than where I am. We moved a lot as a kid, but always kind of around the same area. And it was quite countryfied, which was amazing in retrospect. But at the time I was like, I want the big bright lights of the city. And I felt frustrated by the rules of school. And I wanted more. And and now I kind of look back and feel like I didn't make the most of what I had, but I'm sure, I think that's kind of what everybody does, isn't it? Youth is wasted on the young.
Yeah. And I guess there's an element of romanticizing maybe what you don't have. There's a small element of like grass is greener on the other side.
Yeah, exactly. It's so true.
And something I was intrigued by, because it's very rare that I get to speak to someone that's built what you've built and, yeah, just gone down this path of just an amazing trail of helping people. And I was wondering, was there any signs of it from your childhood that you remember where you were like, oh, that makes a lot of sense now with the work that I do now, the way that you were?
So I as a kid, I was very like passionate about things, and I like to have like deep and meaningful conversations. And I had a really amazing school teacher who got us to write letters for Amnesty International and kind of tried to educate us about the world. And I was quite into everything she was exposing us to, but I wasn't that good at following through. So I was quite, I think I did like a charity, it actually haunts me to this day that I did like a charity collection at school, and I never ended up putting the money in the way you needed to put it to cash it to the charity. And I was a bit like dreamy, I guess, but I had intended that I wanted to like maybe work for the UN or something like that when I was a teenager. But I ended up dropping out of university and like a mixture of mental health reasons, but also because I just wanted to work in a bar and have a fun time in Camden. And then I thought that I'd like messed up that dream and that path, and life has a funny way of having other plans for you. And so it did end up that I've ended up doing this, and in 2015, through just a total accident, ended up starting Help Refugees, which is now Choose Love. But I, even with that, I never intended to start an organization. I never intended to be the CEO of it. I never intended to still be doing this 6 years later. It's all just kind of happened. But there were signs that I cared to want to do something. But it's very much a surprise to me that the organization is in the position it is.
Yeah, I mean, we will get into it, the amazing work that you do. I'm actually really intrigued because, so the one theme there, I guess, that me and you have in common is both dropping out of university. So, and I felt like mine was, there was an element of like death by a million paper cuts, with just every single family member had to have their one-on-one conversation about how disappointed they were that I dropped out of university. And yeah, it just felt like, yeah, I'm kind of over it now. I'm going to try and build a life outside of it. But
yeah,
how did you find that process of dropping out of university? Because I found it really challenging, and there's just that element of dread when you know that you're going to, and you're like, oh God, like, I know that I'm going to do it and have to explain it to my mom and my dad and just other family. But how did you find the process of dropping out of university? And do you kind of look back now and go, oh, it actually is like probably better for Josie the adult now than maybe at the time there was like, oh God, yeah, I don't know. In terms of people just being like, this is such a bad decision. Rah, 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 rah.
It's really annoying when people say those things.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm glad that we have this in common.
Yeah.
I think university is incredible and amazing. And in retrospect, I probably wish I had understood how lucky I was to have that access to education. But I do also think that it's quite, we're just told like, this is the route that you have to take, and you're going to do your A levels, and then you're going to go to university, and then you're going to have a job, and that's going to be your job forever. And that you're just like expected to do all of those things. And you're so young actually at that time. I like look back now and like, but just a baby. And it's okay to mess up, and it's okay to make different decisions, and it's okay to change your mind about what you want to do. And I mean, I found dropping out of university hard because I wasn't really okay. So I managed to finish my first year, and then in my second year, I was really, really struggling and just got to the point where I just couldn't finish the year. So I said I'll come back the year after. And I'm more thinking people were trying to have those conversations with me, but I just was like, I am going to swear now. We talked about swearing before we started recording, but I was just like, fuck off to everyone.
Yeah.
You don't know what I'm going through. You don't know how I feel. Mm. You don't know how hard everything is. I just can't do it, which I couldn't. And so I ended up kind of taking the summer off, and then I went back to repeat my second year. But again, I got like 4 or 5 months in. I just couldn't do it. And I was for a while like, I just wasn't listening to anyone. And then I think I did start to be like, when I started to sort myself out a bit, I was like, ah, dear, what have I done? And I'd wasted all that student loan money. And but like, life is a very good university, and actually, yes, now I learned so many lessons by going through that. I appreciate things in a different way. I've learned to look at myself in a different way. And then all the experiences that I had after that, I wouldn't have ended up working in the music industry. I wouldn't have ended up knowing so many influential people in London that I did, that when this moment started in 2015, when I wanted to do something to help, actually the network that I had, and in some ways the like naivety about what was possible, is what enabled the organization to grow more than a degree would have done. But I do also, I think maybe one day in my life I'd like to finish a degree to prove to myself that I can. But I think we're all on journeys, and what's meant to happen is meant to happen, and we become the people we are through that. So I don't know about you. Do you feel similarly?
Yeah, and we have a really similar transition story. I had a bad back injury in my second year, and then I did the same as you. So I had the time to recover, which was about a year. And in that year, I knew before I'd even gone back, I was like, yeah, there's no fucking way I'm getting through this like third year. And then, yeah, as I kind of transitioned out, maybe initially I was like, oh God, this sucks. But I think a little bit like yourself, like there's a mini badge of honor in there in terms of, I kind of bet on myself and ended up doing okay as far as it goes. And then, yeah, there's still a little part of me that would like to get it somewhat to myself, and somewhat as like a kind of metaphorical middle finger to the people that were like, oh God, you've ruined your life, da 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 da, and all these different bits and bobs. So, yeah, I think 100%, a lot of what you've said is kind of resonates with me, and I empathize with and relate to. I think, yeah, the only difference is a year, really, in the grand scheme of things, is that I got 3/4 through my second year and then kind of sat out and then came back, and yeah, just found it extremely challenging to get the motivation to get back into it. And
yeah,
and deep down probably was just like, oh God, I don't think I've got it internally, just the motivation to kind of give this another crack. So
yeah, it's hard, and it's so structured, and people learn in different ways. And I'm still like, I'm not good at like Excel spreadsheets, and I'm not, I'm always, I guess, like thinking in a visionary way. And so I find that like being so tied to a schedule and an exact way of doing things is like, I'm not that good at that. I'm quite dyslexic as well. And so luckily there are other people in the organization who are good at that, because I can't do that.
Yeah. And I think the thing that I was most proficient at was drinking at university. So I think that that was one thing that I managed to attend 100%, not so much the lectures.
Me too. I got first for that.
Yeah. 100%. 100%. you talk about working in the music industry. So this is very interesting in my head, because obviously when I do the prep work for this, I kind of imagine your life as like a mini timeline as much as I can. And I try and fill as many of it as much as possible in terms of for my own understanding. But I've got a kind of a double header question, because you end up working as a PA to the band Coldplay, which is awesome. Yes. And then, so I kind of want to know the timeline in terms of you leaving university and what leads to you getting that job. And then can you speak to the importance of the role in terms of what it gave you as you transitioned into finding Health Refugees at the time, but what would turn into Choose Love?
So I actually from a young age was like pretty determined to earn my own money. And so I think I started babysitting when I was like 11, which I'm pretty sure isn't legal. But then I used to hand out flyers for dry cleaners. I worked in Pizza Express for a very long number of years. I used to work for like different agencies where you would go and do events at places and serve the drinks and waitress at different like private parties and stuff. And so when I went to university, I was working at Pizza Express in London, but I was also working and like I used to do the door at different places and all sorts of stuff. And then I got this job at a pub in Camden, because my halls were in Camden. It was called the Hawley Arms. Mm-hmm. And it was a pub where like Amy Winehouse went and the Mighty Boosh was just becoming a big thing at that time. Yeah. They were there and Razorlight, and it was just around the corner from MTV. So there would be like Nick Grimshaw was in there just as he was starting out, and Alexa Chung and all of these different people. And that I was super into music. I loved the like all the gigs, and so I just got very into that like music scene. Mm-hmm. But also I really enjoyed like working in bars and restaurants and stuff. And so when I left university, I stayed working in that pub, but I was also doing the door at different club nights. And but I didn't realize what I was also doing at that time was building up a network and partying quite a lot. And and then when I got to like 25, I was a bit like, shit, I've actually just like wasted the first half of my 20s and realized I needed to get a more proper job. And I got a job doing music licensing at Endemol, which is a TV production company. They did like Big Brother and but they also did cool drama. They did loads of really cool stuff. So it was amazing, like really great job. And I learned so, so much. And I was there for a good couple of years. And I also was a nanny as well in my spare time. And then when I have been there like 2.5 years, and a friend of mine who had worked also in the pub, who now she worked in music management for another big artist, she mentioned that there was a job going. A Coldplay. And so I went for this interview, and I didn't expect to get it, but I did. And there was there were a lot of kids around at that time, so I think the fact that I had an understanding of music, but I also knew how to work with kids and stuff was helpful. And then it was just an absolute dream come true to get to work with Coldplay. And I learned so very much. So my boss was their creative director / manager, Phil. And he is an incredible, wonderful human being. And I learned so much about like how you deal with people with kindness and respect. I learned about how such a big global operation can work from a kind of like small nucleus. I learned about touring, I learned about logistics, I learned about creative, I learned about press, I learned about they do so much for charity, so I learned quite a lot about charitable sector as well. So I learned loads and was really, really, really lucky to be exposed to everything that I was there. And then in 2015, which was when a million people arrived in Europe seeking sanctuary, I'd actually got to move to LA with the band, and but I had come home in the summer, and I was here in London, and I felt so heartbroken seeing all the pictures on the news, and just felt like had to do something. And I was like quite a person that used to put like statuses on Facebook that were like petitions, and I hadn't even signed them, or articles and I hadn't read them. It was quite bad. And I just said I wanted to do something to help, and to some friends at lunch. And before we knew it, we'd raised £56,000. We'd started an Amazon wish list, and so many people were buying items and then sending them to a Big Yellow Storage who I'd gone and asked if they would give a free room at lunchtime. And everything kind of snowballed from there. But I genuinely think that having done so many different jobs, and and then also having been a PA, where you just have to make things happen and you have to find a way. Though all of those things, even sometimes I think being able to pull a pint, close the fridge, and doing a credit card transaction at the same time, it was so helpful for being able to like do a million things at once. And yeah, I felt there were so many different things needed in order to get an organization to start off the ground and to respond to things in the way that we did. And I felt like having all of those skills was so, so, so helpful. I should also say that it was very much a movement, and there were just people appearing from all walks of life when the organization started who had all the relevant skills that were needed. And we worked with partner organizations. So it's very much, this is like lots of different people with all different skills from all different backgrounds creating the work that the organization is able to umbrella.
I love it. And I do believe there is something to bar work that gave me a lot that I was just momentarily thinking. I was like, when you're talking about pulling a pint and a credit card and shutting the fridge, yeah, I do think it did give me a lot of skills actually that I kind of maybe don't realize. I even something as like dealing with drunk people, it gives you like an idea of like patience and empathy, and
it does.
It does. On face you're like, how does the bar work help do anything? But I just think,
but it does.
Yeah, there's so many random things that I'm like, oh yeah, I probably learned that behind a bar.
Definitely.
Yeah. So I completely agree. And I just want to delve into these early days of Help Refugees Choose Love, because there's a lot of people post statuses, articles, petitions. A lot of people have an attachment to a mission or have this like really deep connection, like an empathy connection with all different types of things. And I actually think it's probably been one thing in the past, like 18 months in particular, that's been quite sweet to see, like people's empathy for certain causes. So, but a lot of, like myself, I might sign a petition or I might do this. I can't even comprehend the idea of that transition from empathy to do something like donating, all these different things, to we're just going to build a massive charity that this ends up growing into what Choose Love has. So I kind of want to just delve into those early days of Help Refugees. How was that experience of building it and being a co-founder and now a CEO? I don't know if that was always the case. And just describe that time in your life. I can imagine it's just really exciting and a lot's going on, but how was it building a charity, and then just the snowball like you've described of like first it was raising money and then all of a sudden it's getting a Big Yellow Self-Storage and all these different things. How was that experience at that time?
It was insane. it was totally mad, and actually such a privilege. And but you know, was a, I think I said before, you know, none of this was ever intentional. And I think we got called once accidental activists, and it very much, that very much was the case. And so it was initially just trying to raise £1,000 and one van load of tents and sleeping bags to take to Calais and all of France. And then before we knew it, the crowdfunder was £56,000. And before we knew it, so many people said that they had tents and sleeping bags. So I was like, where are we going to put all of this stuff? Oh, I'll go and ask at a Big Yellow Storage in my lunch break because they'll give us a room. And then, oh, well, now we have this address. We can put that on Instagram. And then, oh my God, there's so much stuff arriving. And then they're like, oh, Amazon have called. There's 7,000 packages going to arrive tomorrow. oh, right, we're going to need volunteers to put that away. That's a return to Twitter. And luckily, Dawn and Liana have big Twitter followings. And so people showed up. And then we suddenly had all of this staff and this money. And it was so sweet. Lots of people, when they were sending stuff in, they'd like write handwritten letters and stuff. And then you felt the weight of responsibility of like, people have really trusted us and we don't even really know where this is going to go. And so went to Calais because wanted to make sure we found the right organization to give it to. But when we got there, I never expected to see a site like that in my life. There were 5,000 people living in a field with nothing. Mm. And it was so shocking that governments were not, the UK government, the French government was not responding, was allowing this to happen. And then human beings are amazing. Ordinary people were stepping up to try and help, but there wasn't a coordinated effort per se. And lots of people from the UK were just driving over there, opening the boot of their car. They hadn't looked to see what items were needed, all that kind of thing. And we met some of the smaller French organizations who were responding. And one in particular, L'Auberge de Migrants, said they needed a warehouse. Yes. And they needed to start a shelter building program. And then before we knew it, we had partnered up with them, because you just couldn't unsee what you'd seen. I never expected to see, meet an unaccompanied child or see kids without a nappy and families living in a tent, if they had a tent at all, on our doorstep. So you couldn't just go home and forget about it. So then we had rented a warehouse, we started a distribution system, we were writing on Facebook asking if people could build shelters, and there were other small organizations or individuals who would later set up organizations who began working, and we were in this lucky position of understanding how to use social media and having a network and being able to raise funds and then use that for our own operations, but also give them to other organizations who are working. And then it just, the need was like endless. That camp grew to 10,000 people. We were getting plugged into a volunteer network that was all throughout Europe. There were 10,000 people arriving a day in Greece. So there's just like, if you had the know-how of how to raise more money to get it to the people who needed it, why would you not do that? And it became all consuming in a lot of ways. And that emergency went on for a long time. So, I mean, it's still happening now. So that's why we're still here. And it has only been in the last few years that there's really been like the taking stock of, wow, this is a proper organization and it needs to professionalize. And as a charity, you always want to you don't want to exist. Beginning, you're like, we're going to put ourselves out of business, or actually like the powers that be are going to realize like that they have to do something better than this. Yeah. And they'll come along and fix it, but that hasn't necessarily happened. So as long as there is a need for an organization like ours, it will exist whether I'm the CEO or not.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is an element though, that, like, although you've described it as like almost an accident in terms of just it happening and then growing from there, it is still symbolic, I think, of who you are. I think there's a lot of people that see things and go, oh, that kind of sucks. And even if it hits a chord quite long term, being like, yeah, but I don't know if it's like self-belief or a drawing to a mission. I don't know. But it's this idea of, it's just incredible that you took the kind of the onus and was like, right, well, we're just going to figure this out. And remaining open-minded, being compassion-led, I think, yeah, I just, in my head, it says a lot about who you are and kind of why I was kind of drawn to your story when I finally got to meet you. And yeah, although you describe it as, yeah, we just kind of happened and kept on going, it almost feels like on my end, it feels like doing yourself a disservice, because there's probably millions of people that have had that potential, but you actualized it, and it's incredible.
Wow, well, that's very kind. Thank you.
No problem at all. How was, in those early days, what was the reaction from like family and friends? Because I can imagine there's an array of like reactions to you posting articles and just asking people to help as you were building what you were building. But did you find it a supportive environment that you had behind you? Did you find it something that in your collective, in terms of the people that founded Help Refugees, it was great, but maybe that kind of degree of separation maybe wasn't. But yeah, how were your family and friends about you kind of, you were growing from a PA with a band that had this amazing job, and you were becoming, you were kind of blossoming into this leader and a face of like an amazing charity. So yeah, what was your family and friends' reaction to what you were building in those early stages?
I think they thought I was insane, actually. because if you think at the beginning it wasn't, you know, it was growing really quickly, but it wasn't a big, it wasn't like, oh, you're becoming the CEO of a charity. It was like, what do you mean you're going and spending all of that time in Calais? Or I think people thought it was quite mad. And didn't necessarily understand it, and especially because it was all becoming so politicized at that time. Mm. And I had also, mental health is something that's like comes up with me and a lot in my life. And
yeah,
it was a funny time where everything felt very crazy. And I think I was, it was just a very crazy time. Mm. I don't really know how best to describe it. I think people maybe were a bit worried about me.
Yeah.
But then also very quickly turned to people, everyone getting involved and everyone helping. And there was such an amazing movement of civil society at that time that I feel very, very lucky and privileged to have been a part of, because we might be well known, but it absolutely wasn't just us. It was so many different organizations and so many people, and still is. And I've got to meet some of the most extraordinary people ever. So feel very lucky.
I love that. And as much as you want to delve into this, because that it's something that I was thinking about kind of your ascension with Choose Love now, but and I was wondering, how did you find the battle in terms of the process of self-care and self-preservation and trying to keep yourself in a positive space when firstly you're not like a standaway CEO, you're very much in the work that you're doing. So I feel like this is a potential assumption, but the idea of you stay very informed on what's happening, like you've said, with Afghanistan at the moment. And unfortunately, like you said, as a charity, you don't want to be in existence. You'd rather the issues all be solved. But the idea of the emotional and mental battles that come with just being so aware of the pain that people are going through, how do you find the balance of being informed, remaining empathetic, remaining attached to these stories of just like pain, really, I guess, is the, I'm oversimplifying it, but for kind of processing it, but how do you find that balance of staying informed and very much engaged whilst also engaging in self-preservation and just, yeah, preserving the human being that is Josie to like be happy and positive along the way?
I mean, you know, I think it's a difficult thing because, you know, this, what's happened to these communities that we work with and support and accompany, it hasn't happened to us. Mm. And so whilst we can empathize, we can't ever really truly imagine what it's like to have lost your home and to have had to undertake these journeys and leave everything behind, or lose family members, or have been through what so many people have been through and are still going through. And so it always feels that it feels bad to like even talk about how you feel, because it's nothing compared to what other people feel. And we don't want to like center ourselves in that. But obviously I can't speak for other people, but I can in the beginning, and again, not just in our organization, but in the kind of this civil society response, which only had to exist because the response that should have come from governments or larger NGOs didn't happen. But people pushed themselves to burnout because it felt like you have to give it every minute of every day. And it's our responsibility to do everything that we can, because this is so unfair and it's so unjust and we're privileged. And but then you realize that, you know, you're no help to anyone if you push yourself to that. And it's still something that we're learning now. And as an organization, we've had to do a lot of work on changing that culture of overworking and pushing yourselves too far. Mm. And you do have to unlearn it, and you do have to embed self-care. And it is important to have therapy, and it is important to take time and work for normal working hours and all of those things. So it's definitely been a journey. And yeah, we have seen some awful things. We have had the most heartbreaking stories, but like I said, they haven't happened to us, and so all we can do is try and do our very best to use what privilege we have, what access we have, to try and change things so that it doesn't happen to more people, and we can do what we can to support those that it has happened to.
Yeah, that's incredible in terms of being aware. And I guess there's this element of the eventual goal in everything is like a world peace, kind of everyone being happy, healthy, and having the resources that they need. And I guess the grandioso mission, the very like existential mission, is so big that I guess you can easily feel like, oh, time that I'm resting or time that I'm not doing it, you feel like it's a zero sum game. That it's like, I have to make this investment, otherwise I'm not making the investment, and it's you feel like you're chasing like a you're making up lost time, I guess.
In fact, in our professionalization, we have recently been doing our vision, mission, and the theory of change. And the mission of the organization is a world that chooses love and justice every day for everyone. Mm. And that is a beautiful mission, but it is a vision. But it's very broad. And, you know, I think we have to, that's what we're working towards. Are we going to achieve that in our lifetimes? Probably not. And you have to also, that's what we're working towards, but you have to also accept that you can't be all things to all people, and you won't do one thing well if you try and do everything. Yeah. So you have to, like, then within that, focus on what are the things that we are able to do? What are the things that we should do? And let's set ourselves like achievable goals, and then move on to the next thing. Yeah. And you have to do that, otherwise you don't do a good job, and you don't protect yourself in order to continue to do the job.
Completely agree. And I love that mission / vision. That's beautiful. And it's worded so beautifully as well. So if you don't want to talk about this, please just say something that I learned in terms of, you were talking about, especially in the past 18 months, we've had these incredibly like challenging 18 months in terms of the world, in terms of just everything. This pandemic has given people unique problems, but we've all experienced it as the world. But something that I noticed that you had recently was hitting a milestone of 18 months sober. I mean, firstly, huge congratulations, because that is an incredible achievement in any 18 months, not alone the past 18 months where I've probably picked up the alcohol that you haven't drunk. But how have you found the journey of sobriety, and how have you found it's impacted, in particular, this very challenging kind of, you know, chapter in all of our lives? But how have you found that sobriety's maybe impacted the past 18 months? And just, battling through what we've all had to battle through as a collective.
Well, no, I'm totally happy to talk about it.
All right, thank God.
I very much, you know, I think even before the organization began, I had addiction issues, partly why I left university, if I look back in retrospect, and it's something I've really always struggled with since I was about 15. But what was really happening is that I was coping with stress and sometimes secondary trauma and stuff with my addictions. And as the CEO of a multinational NGO, that really wasn't very responsible. And it was impacting my life in so many different areas. My personal life, it was beginning to impact my professional life. And I just knew that it wasn't something that could go on. So I feel very lucky that I managed to find the strength to do it. And I initially did go to meetings and stuff, but it was literally just before COVID.
Yeah.
And then it was COVID. And although some people say it must have been hard in the challenges, I think actually for me it was good because I wasn't at events,
yeah.
I wasn't at dinners. I got to have that time to get time under my belt. And I'm better at my job. I'm better as a person. It's hard, but it's definitely one of the best things I've ever done. I think like if I was a person that could just have one glass of wine at dinner, then that would be really nice. Or at the end of a hard day, just have one glass of wine, but I can't. So for now, I'm on this journey, but who knows what the future holds, but for now it's definitely the right thing for me.
Yeah, and it is an incredible achievement. I can imagine I did 100 days once just as like,
wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, I kind of just just fancied it. I think had a think about it and was like, I'll give it a go.
But it's good that you know that you could do it, because I definitely couldn't have done just 100 days.
I mean, I had about 2 pints and was like steaming, I feel like, afterwards. But, it takes incredible discipline. It's something that, once again, just greatly respect about you. And it's just a branch off the tree of like the respect I kind of have for you. But I'm going to ask one more question before the final four. And
okay.
I'm going to say a lot of nice things, so I hope this isn't too kind of like, oh God, I wish he'd stop. But I want to give people like that have maybe they've heard of Choose Love, but just don't quite comprehend like how impactful it's been. So Choose Love has helped over 120 projects across 15 different countries, raising over $43 million for humanitarian aid. You, Josie, have been a huge integral part of building an organization that improves and saves so many people's lives. In my opinion, you're one of the most impressive women I've had the fortune of meeting, not only for your professional achievements, but the human being that you are as a leader of a global charity. And as you've said, in terms of leading with kindness, leading with empathy, and just, showing a form of leadership that we maybe don't see all the time. So you've shown what it means to bring kindness to leadership, and it's something that I love. And I was wondering, do you ever allow yourself to be reflective of what you've achieved after leaving university, working in pubs, doing PA work with Coldplay, and just what you've achieved as a philanthropist and a leader and just in general as a founder of something that, look, I think is incredible. I've seen Choose Love t-shirts for years. Obviously, I got to meet you at that time in London, near Leicester Square, I believe, but it was at a conference. But do you ever allow yourself the time to reflect and be like, oh, fuck, this is actually quite cool what we've ended up building here at Choose Love?
Well, that's very kind. Thank you.
No worries.
People can't see why I'm blushing.
Oh.
I think I did say for a good few years, we didn't really take that time to reflect, and it was always just looking forward. What more can we do? And it still is to a degree, but obviously, it's a difficult thing, because it's amazing that the organization is able to do what it's able to do. It's amazing that it's achieved what it's able to achieve. It's always just putting a plaster on something. And, we try and do work to address root causes, and sometimes we have small wins, but there's no big wins as yet. So it always feels weird to be like, oh, this is so successful and amazing, when it's because people are suffering. So, and because awful things are happening in the world. So that, that all, that also sits a bit uncomfortably, but it's, yeah, it's, I always use the word privilege, but it is, it's a privilege to do this work. And I feel very lucky to get to be in this, in the position that the organization is in, and the support that we have from the public is just incredible. You know, last, talking about everything that's been happening in Afghanistan, you know, we raised £270,000 in a week online. Wow. To support Afghans fleeing fleeing Afghanistan, and we had 60,000 people email their MP using our template, and that, you know, that is collective power, that is people power, and so just feel, I feel very lucky that that we get to continue to do this work.
Yeah, it's well, I just think you're very incredible, so I'm going to leave it at that. But, Josie, this is the time for you to shamelessly plug whatever you've got going on.
Okay.
And shameless being the key word. So how can people help Choose Love? How can people keep up to date with the Josie Norton story? and, yeah, what can people do to kind of support what you've built so far?
So they can follow Choose Love on socials, which is at Choose Love, and you will find out information about what's happening in the world. I think it's educating yourself is the first step. Talking to your friends and family about what's going on and changing hearts and minds is the next step. If you're able to, donating helps so much, and you can do that either to specific fundraisers that we're doing or our general donate page, or we also have an online store, www.choose.love, and you can go on there and buy like a tent or a pair of child's boots or a education pack, which is represented by a school bag. You buy the item, you don't get anything, you just, that money goes on that specific thing, in we buy the items or support the services in the countries. So that's amazing. Take the advocacy actions, write to your MP, you can use our templates or sign petitions, you know, be an active citizen is the next thing. Volunteer, we're not operational anymore, so we don't have necessarily volunteer positions, and most of our partners, because of COVID, especially those abroad, haven't either, but people can look up their local refugees welcome you know, organization and volunteer with them. Or it doesn't need to be for refugees, just volunteering in any form is great. Buying Choose Love merch, which you can also do on our website. So t-shirts, hoodies, hopefully gonna have hats soon. Ooh. So I'm looking forward to seeing you in that.
Yeah, I will.
And that's the ways that you can help, really, and keep updated.
I love it. So people, look in the show notes, because what Josie has just elocuted very, very beautifully is living in the show notes. So please check it out, and please go support an amazing charity. Right, Josie, these are the final four questions.
Okay.
I ask everybody these questions. They are slightly grandioso life questions. But question number one, Josie, if I gave you a megaphone that spoke to the entire world and you could only share one message, what would it be?
Choose Love.
Yeah. I love it. Question number two. What's a personal struggle that you battle with that many people may not know about?
Well, I think I'm pretty open and honest about my personal struggles. So, I mean, my addiction issues and mental health issues would be mine.
All right. Awesome. Number three, what are three personality traits / characteristics that you would say you've built your life upon up to this point?
I would say smiling, optimism, and I don't know what the right, like, not being afraid of failing.
Oh, I like it. Yeah, I like it. That's great. And the last question. So this is, in all honesty, my favorite question to ask anybody.
Okay.
And I've basically got a podcast that allows me to do it. So, Josie, many years into the future, your time as Josie Norton is coming to an end. The person closest to you can only describe you and your time here on Earth in one sentence. What would you hope that would be?
Maybe I'm going to cop out of it and say that I chose love.
Yeah, I love it. That's great.
I hope so. I think, yeah, in all aspects of life, I would hope.
Oh, I love it. That's amazing. Josie, once again, I know how busy you are. I'm super, super grateful for your time. And yeah, once again, I just love the work that you guys do with Choose Love. And yeah, you're just fantastic too. So I'm extremely grateful. Thank you so much.
No, thank you so, so much. And thank you for supporting Choose Love. And thank you for having me on.
No worries. And you wrapped up season 4 in just the perfect way. I'm extremely grateful.
Great. I'm so pleased. Thank you. There were such great questions. No, I really enjoyed it.
No problem. All right, everyone. Goodbye. Bye.
Thank you.